Hello, I'm Daniel Christenwahl, author of Designing Regenerative Cultures.
And I'm Philippa Duffy, Oceania Director at the RSA. You're listening to Series 2 of Regeneration Rising, a podcast exploring how we can create a thriving home for all on our planet. In this conversation, we're thrilled to be joined by award-winning author, disruptor and contrarian, Carol Sanford. Over the last 40 years, Carol has shaped the fields of regenerative business, leadership, and entrepreneurship through her best-selling books, global thought leadership, educational offerings, and human development work. She's worked extensively with Fortune 500 companies, lectured at leading business and management schools across America, and regularly blogs for The Economist, CNBC, and Stanford Social Innovation Review. Her multiple award-winning book, The Responsible Business, is used as a core text at Harvard, Stanford, and the Google Innovation Lab. In October 2022, Carol was diagnosed with ALS, a degenerative and ultimately fatal motor neuron disease. So we are incredibly grateful to have had this conversation with her. Carol, we're so honored to have you here. We've spoken a lot to people over the last 18 months about the regenerative movement. But of course, without your work, we wouldn't be here discussing this. So firstly, thank you for all that you've given us. But also, now, as you approach the end of your life, what would you like your legacy to be?
I want no legacy. A legacy is about an ego. Wanting something. I'm part of a lineage, and by the way, it's 47 years. And before that, my grandfather was long involved as a Mohawk in the indigenous community. And he learned from those spiritual traditions as I did and still do. And so anyone who thinks they should have a legacy is approaching this from arrogance and not from the blessing they have of being in a lineage.
In that lineage, would you say that what people are trying to express is life's regenerative impulse to come through them as agents of the change that the system is asking them to express? Is that...
No, I think that's garbage also. Like, we have some individual role we're supposed to play. The work that I've studied, we didn't use the word regeneration except in explanation. It was about consciousness, our ability to be able to create the being state that allows us to be conscious. One of the subjects is regeneration. It's not the subject. And the other thing I see with people who are working with regeneration in the last 10 years, I'd say, or eight, is they think it's wrapped around whatever they do. They start redefining the work of ancient peoples and ancient work as about what they're doing. And so if you're working on regeneration, you think that's what it's all about. But that's really another ego approach. It's about consciousness.
And Carol, could you share a little bit more about your journey into this work?
Gosh, I have no idea. I was raised by a couple of parents who were kind of a mess and had either evil in their heart or mental illness. But I had a grandfather who, from a very young age, started teaching me the work of the Mohawk he had grown up in, which is really it's an Iroquois nation. And it's part of what our constitution is based on. And so I studied so many different subjects, including political science, where I, because of my grandfather talking about the Iroquois, I learned that our constitution was founded on that. And so I've always studied the processes. My grandfather always told me that I was a positive contrarian, which means anything you say, I'm going to disagree with. And he said, the power of that is because I can see what other people can't see and what they've gotten themselves trapped in. So from a very young age, my grandfather was developing and cultivating that positive contrarian nature, because the positive part is really important. It's not about doing good, but it's about seeing what needs to be seen. And so all my books I've written have been about why what we can't see. And so I always was living as best I could what my grandfather was teaching me. And as I went to, I think, a turning point to naming what I'm doing was I studied with Thomas Kuhn, who you may know about, who wrote a book called The Structure of the Scientific Revolution. And the class he was teaching at Berkeley, UC Berkeley in the state, where I was attending school, and he had just written his book, his landmark book. And we were one night at something called the Ratskeller. You know, it's like where the kids go after class with the professors. And Kuhn was asking us crazy questions like, tell me how you got to believe what you believe. And we would go around the room. There might have been 20, 25 huddled around Kuhn. And everyone would do these funny things like what they'd learned in college. He said, talk to me about your parents, about your religion, about how you grew up believing what you did. And so we went over, and we had every religion pretty much on the face of the earth at an international university. And after we kind of discovered what we had come from, he said, how do you change? Oh, no. One of the students asked him, how do you change what people believe? You're talking about paradigms. How do you change it? And he said, that's your job. I figured out the structuring of how it happens. And that had a huge impact on me. I felt like he was talking to me personally. And I did a lot of work on exploring how paradigms formed and how they became invisible to people. And then I was at the same time entering a lot of work on meditation and our inability to see what we were being shaped by and becoming our paradigm. And the other thing that was happening to me at the same time is UC Berkeley had an entry program where you spend a lot of time learning how to learn and how it was that your mind adopted ideas untested. It became the work of the Great Books series for St. John's University and eventually published. And so I set out to learn how to educate people about how they were learning and how it was shaping their answers and blocking them from seeing much more.
In your book, Indirect Work, in the description of the book, you say that most people have a mistaken theory of change, how to actually make change happen. Could you describe where they're mistaken and what your approach to change is with this indirect work?
My approach to change has changed a lot. I try and never have one thing that I always do. I try and never do anything twice. So that's the basis of my change theory. All right, let's talk about what I mean. The other person I studied with at Berkeley was the creator of the atomic bomb, Edward Teller. And he studied with Einstein at Princeton. He got a lot of ideas about how Einstein was teaching people about change. And I love his story, which was that Einstein used to say, when in front of his classes, what's the difference in classical physics and quantum physics. And classical physics is based on an idea about everything has a right and wrong answer. And it's, you just have to discover that. It's like a billiard ball theory of change, where you have a pool table. It has pockets, and your job is to get all the people into the right pockets. And so you think you're the holder of the cue stick. And so you're looking at the billiard or pool table, and it has pockets, and it has beings on it that need to get into the right pockets. So you think your work is to pick up the cue stick and hit the balls into the right pocket, like you know them. And so when you say, what's my legacy, that's part of acoustic model, that I think I know where people should go. And what he said quantum theory is there's no acoustic, there's no table with right pockets. It's not your job to be the expert in the change engine, it's to be a matrix. The quantum theory is based on every person is you want to help them gain the capability to determine their own answer. Never give them answers. And what you do is work on creating the right kind of matrix. And your job is to keep making sure the matrix is healthy and developmental for that to happen under their own terms. You're not in charge. You do not have answers. Answers are not permanent, and each one has its own. So my theory of change is I only develop capability of the mind to think. My latest book is a book about epistemology and why all the experts we have in the field of sustainability and regeneration, misnamed for most people, is really about regenerative learning or knowing is about self-discovery and being in a process where people learn how to learn in the same way that Deirdre Shaw wrote a book, great book called Learning How to Learn. He's a Sufi mystic. And he said the greatest error we make is transferring knowledge untested to be absorbed. And we do that at the mercy of our ego so that we promote ourselves being the answer person. And so the most important influences on me were all about none of them positioning themselves. They didn't, you know, try and write. If you look on LinkedIn, it says expert, all sorts of people, putting whatever gives them credentials. I avoid them like the plague, because that means that they are in a different epistemology from which we can find the answers. Our planet needs, our society needs, our humans need, and then we get in pitch wars with each other, who knows the most. And so the epistemology is the key to all the people who I studied with.
When I sat down to start writing my book, like suddenly the question came to me, what can I write here? What are solutions? And then very quickly, I thought, actually, one pattern that is a consistent pattern is that yesterday's solution turned into today's problem. And solutions, if anything, have to be stepping stones of learning, of engaging people to have conversations with each other and learn both individually, collectively, and about their context. And then they need to have the ability to question whatever solution they proposed. And so the core of my book is that there's 250 questions in it, and the sort of ad nauseum repetitive thing is creating regenerative cultures is about living the questions and not about arguing about solutions.
There's one thing I would add to that. Giving people the questions also will stop them thinking they got the questions from the expert. And so learning how to frame questions and have people in a process where they learn how to do that. And when you said the solutions, I would say the questions are going to change over time. And your understanding is going to change over time. I never let myself give the same definition twice. I'm trying very hard and talking to you not to say it the same way I ever said it before. I have to demand of myself that I reconceive of it and ask, what did I not see last time? And therefore, I have to evolve my thinking. And I see other people saying things repeatedly that they're not evolving. And so you do that your whole life. And it's about you evolving. And I do teach people how to do that process. So I never give the same answer.
Carol, you have a long association with the Regenesis Institute, built around your friendship, very, very long friendship with Pamela Meng. And I just wondered if you could tell us a bit more about the synergies between your work with the change agent development community that you've been cultivating and also Regenesis's community of regenerative practitioners.
We are in a school, capital S school, and that means we come from the same epistemology and cosmology. Epistemology about how people learn together. And there's so much overlap in our communities. I send a lot of people, well, everyone I can, to go do TRP and further if they want. And they send people to me. But we're not separate communities. We are part of the same school. And we implement things differently. They're working more at the plane of community and building community using a set of concepts. But I believe story of place is the most valuable thing for any organization to do. So when I will have an organization that's at a city level, I encourage them to go do TRP. But we're working at the same cosmology about how the world works. That's the other thing that's suffered in collaboration. People don't actually come from the same cosmology. And so they'll feel like they're disagreeing. If people who feel like they're disagreeing with Regenesis, and I know there are a few, they talk to me, I say, well, what's your cosmology? Because that's probably where it differs. So we're part of the same school, and there are probably 100 other around the world organizations which are part of our school, and they apply things in a different way somewhere. But they come from the same way of learning because they're working on consciousness, and they come from the same cosmology, which has to do with spiritual schools about how the world works. Pamela's my best friend. We raised our children together. Her son used to call me his other mother, Nicholas. My daughter was her daughter's best friend, and with her when she died, when Pamela's daughter died. And so we have a lot of overlap in many levels, but mostly we think of ourselves as in the same bigger school.
Can you say more about that cosmology that you share?
Well, we draw on some of the same teachings, like looking at Gurdjieff in the fourth way, which believes that each being has an essence, that if it can connect to that, can express more wholeness in the world and grow that over time in infinitely. We believe in that learning is not about answers, but about learning to grow and discover for ourselves through a resourcing process. And that it's about consciousness first and foremost, not the way. I think all the stuff we're doing on sustainability and regeneration is 90% making things worse, because it's not working on consciousness, it's making people more mechanical. And the mechanicalness is the real foundation of our school, overcoming mechanicalness. So if we ever try and get things tied down or any other thing that tries to give our answers, we're probably wrong because we're not building consciousness. And if you look at the kind of solutions and the stuff I see people selling right now, it's selling answers. If you do that, you don't sell consciousness. You compete for who has the best answer. So our cosmology is more about building the capacity to self-observe and grow ourselves. And the ontology about humans and how they grow is about being in developmental schools, not regenerative enter people.
For those people who are listening that consider themselves part of this growing regeneration, rising and global movement of people working on connecting with our deep lineage as human beings, of having been regenerative presences in place and expressions of place. I mean, there are people who are consciously saying, I might not understand this fully, but I want to get my community, the business world or the planning world or the or architecture a little bit further along the lines. And so they're starting to, as you said, name what they're already doing regenerative. If you could give any advice to these groups of people, or as you observe the regenerative field and get questions, what's the most common mistakes, the most common pitfalls, where are people deeply wrong?
They work on it directly instead of indirectly. And directly means they try and define everything by their current level of understanding as regenerative. And they don't move beyond that. There's a way to test yourself. If you work on existence, which means you look at the physical world and what has to change and what people have to change, what they do, you're not in a regenerative practice. If you're working on developing the mind that every time you work, they can learn to see something in a more developmental way, in a essence way, in a way of working. I've written a lot about seven first principles of regeneration. My grandfather called them living systems principles. If you want to learn, and I don't mean do it, because it'll take you years. It took me years, and I worked at it full time to understand what something is. You have to start with developing a better mind, because the thing that blocks us is the mind we use. It's a physical thing mind or process mind. It works at the thing level. And if we do that, we can't be a regeneration. We have to learn how to activate an essence mind and a sourcing mind. The essence mind is about essence thinking, asking what is something in its core. Like if I look at me later along my life, besides the positive contrarian, I came to understand that my essence was to disrupt certainty. And if I can always operate from that, and you can feel that, that's what I do. Not because I'm trying to make people wrong, but because I want them to rethink. I want them to build a mind that can see where they're sourcing. And if you're sourcing from physical, even I watch people who's, Tyson and I talk about this all the time. Tyson Yonkaporta, people look at indigenous wisdom, like you just said, people are doing, but they don't see what the indigenous people see. They see the things they do, and then they copy what they do, and they tell stories about what they do. And Tyson said, it's more about who we are. It's more about where we source ideas. And so I would say if you've got people who are trying to get there by more doing of what they think is regeneration and more answers, you're not working in regenerative mode. You have to work from a sourcing mind, which sees where you're getting your ideas, how you're shaping them. And you also have to work from the essence mind, no generic ideas. If you have generic ideas about what regeneration looks like, you're not in regeneration. It has no generics. It has no categories. It is specific. My grandfather was the, what do they call him, Farm Bureau advisor during the Dust Bowl in Oklahoma and the Panhandle of Texas. He saved thousands of hectares of land because he had no generic Mohawk answers, which he was, right? He went to each life shed. And I learned that idea from him. Watersheds are an anthropocentric idea. He looked at a life shed that had its own unique patterns of water movement, of animal life, and the farms below him were the result of the same. And he said, there's no one answer. And he was so loved by all the farmers because he gave up this generic answer. So that's another clue. If people are working and looking for generic answers, not regenerating from a specific, they're not doing regeneration. Work on the development of the mind. That's what I've worked on.
I mean, you at the beginning named some of the key influences with Kuhn and others. In my learning journey, somebody who was actually a student of Idira Shah, Professor Brian Goodwin, who's one of the founders of complexity science, was very influential on my thinking. And also a person called Henry Bortoft, who worked looking at how Goethe saw the world through a different epistemology. That would in a modern day world you would call it phenomenology, because he was while exactly at the time where Newton was proposing the billiard ball universe you just spoke about, and we were going more and more mechanistic and more unaware that we, as you were saying, live in a world where our thinking is objectifying. It's about objects. And Goethe, both as a poet, but more as a scientist, named the dimension of mind in the bringing forth the world. And for me, that somehow resonates strongly with the school you're describing. But I'm open to...
Well, but Goethe was missing the developmental aspect. It was like... His beautiful work did describe, and I agree with you, his poetry is amazing, but it described it more as a set of answers to what he saw and not inviting people to learn how to develop the mind. Most of what I experienced anyway, and I'm not critiquing Goethe because I'm not an expert, and I don't draw on his thinking for mine, but to me, the core a living epistemology and cosmology is a process of developing the mind, not just, or Sri Aurobindo did a beautiful job describing the minds also, very much like Goethe, but neither of them give any practice in developing the being and developing the beings in community. And so one of the things that our school has been given a great gift to is a technology, we call it, that's drawn from a cosmology about how to develop people, how to move them from wherever they are to the greatest advance they can make. And that's missing. And we'd call that doing it in the fourth way in your everyday life, so you don't go off to a ashram or some guru. Our school has no model, because a model means do this in this way, and you have to invent your own. You have to do what's right in the moment. Model means I'm doing it to show you something. I assure you I'm not, and I don't want you to trust me. Don't try and accept anything I say is right. don't reject it, but that's very important.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed episode 5 of Regeneration Rising Series 2. If this episode has inspired your thinking, please check out the show notes for links and resources and to find out how you can be part of the regeneration.
In celebration of the launch of Regeneration Rising, we're offering a special promotion for listeners to join our global community of RSA Fellows. Our fellowship is a network of over 31,000 innovators, educators, and entrepreneurs committed to finding better ways of thinking, acting, and delivering change. To receive a 25% discount off your first year of membership and a waived registration fee, visit thersa.org and use the discount code RSAPOD on your application form. See the show notes for terms and conditions.